Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy. This is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, the one and only Danny Dyer joins me in studio to talk about his new film, One Last Deal. He also talks about the purple patch he seems to be experiencing, starring in everything from Rivals to winning BAFTAs. I talk to the voice cast of the Pixar's new animated movie, Hopper. And as always, all the TV and movies you want to stream or skip, you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on News Talk. Good weekend to you all. And I do hope you're doing well as the sun appears in the skies over our fair isle once more. Lots of people in touch all week long. There was an email a couple of weeks ago I never got to, but I just wanted to mention a regular listener, Mark, who sent me an email titled "To Sneeze or Not to Sneeze?" That is the question. All about going to see Hamlet, which he enjoyed, but there was someone sniffing and then other people coughing and sneezing, which was ruining the movie for him. Somewhat. I have to say, though, and I know that can happen, but I've often bemoaned, you know, bad cinema etiquette on this show. But lately, I am experiencing, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, a bit of a turnaround for the positive, because I was at Hopper's, which we'll talk about on Sunday, at a kind of family, well, not a family screen, it was just up near where I lived, but I had the whole family there. And even for a kids' movie, I thought it was, you know, where all bets are usually off and people are climbing on seats. But I thought it was very well mannered for a kid screening. And, you know, there was parents whispering to their children and there was no phones. And I was heartened by it because I just, you know, when I'm in the dark room, I want it dark. I don't want phones. I don't want any of that stuff. I also noticed I was on a train on Thursday, and hats off to Irish Rail. It's not a phrase I utter that often in my life, but there was constant announcements about, please do not use your devices without headphones, and don't engage in phone calls, at one point they said, without headphones, which, as I say, hats off to them, because that, whatever about the cinema, public transport, it just joys absolutely bananas that it's somehow become permissible to have phone calls on speaker or listen to music without headphones. It just baffles me where this became all right. But as I say, there seems to be a sea change. Anyway, listen, I'm going off topic. I was in the cinema on Sunday. Everyone was very well behaved. It made me smile. So there you go. Now listen, in TV this week, I was watching this.
It has recently come to my attention that I may never again have power over another human being. My students, who once fell over themselves to impress me, now consider my teachings out of touch. My daughter, who used to worship me, now finds my entire personhood rather useless. And while it may be possible that a man might make a concession for me, I may not be the cause of a spontaneous erection ever again. As an older woman, truly, what is more embarrassing, I will have lost the ability to captivate.
Now that is a clip from Vladimir, which is on Netflix it landed on Thursday of this week. And all 8 episodes are up there for your viewing pleasure. That was Rachel Weisz, is a brilliant actress. And in this, as you kind of heard there, she plays a woman. I think she's meant to be in her early 50s. She's a college professor. She did write a book back in the day. She's married to John Slattery, the guy we know from Sex and the City and Mad Men, I suppose. Most notably, people remember him as the grey-haired gent. He always seemed to be playing a grey-haired older gent. Charming yet sleazy seems to be what he does. He does that in this as well. She is married to him. As you heard there, she's feeling like life is changing for her and that she's no longer as relevant as she used to be. Her husband is in the same college as her and he's in a bit of trouble for relationships he's had with students, and they've kind of had an open marriage, we find out pretty early on in the show. But what gets the show going is Leo Woodhull, who we know famously from One Day, who was brilliant to that, very handsome man, comes in as a lecturer in the university she's in this very picturesque college town, and she falls hook, line, and sinker for him. And this is quite a steamy show. Now, the thing is, and I suppose one of the motifs of this show is that Rachel Weisz's character breaks the fourth wall a lot. Like, she talks to the audience. Now, this is getting varying reviews. Some people are raving about it. I was less enthused than I thought I might be. I was on The Hard Shoulder with Shane and Kira during the week, and Shane Coleman made this good point. He said, you know, this is announcing itself like it's brilliant. And maybe it isn't. Now, he said that, in fairness, based only on the trailer. But there is a slight sense of this is a brilliant show before you even watch it. It's okay. It kind of holds your interest. But I kept waiting for something really meaty to happen and kick in and grab me. My wife watched it with me, as she often does with these things, and had a similar reaction to it. So I was slightly disappointed by Vladimir on Netflix. Also, this thing about breaking the fourth wall, you know, it has to be purposeful. There has to be a point to it. We have to really want to hear from the person who's doing it, like in Fleabag, like in House of Cards, and also actually in The Usual Suspects, both of which the somewhat disgraced Kevin Spacey was in. But those breaking of the fourth wall where the characters talk to the audience outside of what's going on, there has to be a real point to it. It has to bring you into the story. And I'm not sure if it does in this, and if it's more just of a gimmick. So Vladimir is only so-so. I'd only give it about 2.5 stars out of 5, even though I can't fault any of the performances. But I feel this is being sold on its steaminess. It's not actually, well, it's pretty steamy. I don't know. I don't know what's steamy anymore. I've been around too long. But I think they're selling the steaminess of it, but I'm not sure there's a brilliant show underneath. There's an okay show underneath. Do let me know if you've watched it or what you're making of it. Screentime@newstalk.com is the email address. Now, also on Netflix, but in the cinema this week, is this.
Last night, the BSA factory suffered a direct hit. All of the night shift on the artillery depot were killed.
You're their MP now.
They don't need an MP. They pray to Christ and to you. Neither one answers their prayers.
I got a war of my own, Ed. It's out of my head.
You know, Tommy, you have family who are not ghosts. How long since you spoke to your sons?
I've been reviewing everything. Everything. I was never a father, either. I was a form of government. No longer believe in government of any kind.
Oh yes, the great Cillian Murphy. Peaky Blinders is back. Now that is a clip from the movie Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. Now we're going to talk about this a lot next week because I'm talking to the cast, including Cillian Murphy. But I'm honor bound to quickly tell you about it because it is in cinemas this week. It's getting a cinema release, which often means that, you know, a streamer, if they're putting something into a cinema first, they care about its cinematic value. They may even want it to be considered for awards come the time. Peaky Blinders, I mean, I think most people know what Peaky Blinders is about. A gang, a real life gang in Birmingham between the wars, who were pretty rotten people and were hoodlums, and they had razor blades in their caps. There were 6 seasons of it. Some people felt it was diminishing returns. It was still a great TV show, even if it dwindled a little as the series went on. But what we have in this movie is Cillian Murphy's character, who you heard there, is he's always been a man haunted by ghosts. But after the events of the last season on TV, season 6, he's now kind of holed up in this mansion, crumbling mansion, wrestling with the ghosts of his past. And we have his son, now played brilliantly by Barry Keoghan, who looks just kind of like a younger version of him in this, running the Peaky Blinders, but maybe not doing a great job of it. It's taking place in World War II, and the Nazis, who have a henchman in the form of Tim Roth, are trying to flood the British economy with money. And that's one of the weapons they're going to use. So this is war-torn Birmingham and England. And I suppose the movie is about Cillian Murphy possibly coming back to take charge. I thought this was very good, I have to say. Some people are saying it's, you know, just like a long episode, but it's like a very good long episode, and it is very cinematic. And what I really like about it is Peaky Blinders has always been a show about not just Cillian Murphy's character, but his brothers and other people in the series haunted by their experiences of World War One. And Stephen Knight said he always wanted the show to kind of take place between the two wars and to show the damage that it was done. And I think, you know, the Peaky Blinders are horrible people, but their characters are interesting because they are people, I'm not excusing it, but they were people who were kind of broken by World War One. And that hauntedness is so on show here. Cillian Murphy is more haunted than ever, but there's also a lot of action in it, and it's quite cinematic. I mean, Peaky Blinders was always a cinematic kind of show on TV, but this is worthy of a cinema release. Rebecca Ferguson is in it as well. Stephen Graham comes later. I thought it was really good, and I think it will really keep the Peaky Blinders fans happy. And it is great to see Cillian Murphy back as Tommy Shelby. So that is Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, now in cinemas from this weekend. So worth a watch in the cinema, if you ask me. Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. It will be on Netflix next week. And then quickly, I want to tell you about an Irish language movie that's in cinemas from this Friday, Boitcha. So this, which my Irish isn't what it should be, but I think it means drowned or underwater. And what we have is an Irish language movie, one or two tiny bits of English in it, but it's almost entirely in Irish. It's set in the late 70s. You can tell from the get up, set in a beautiful village in the west of Ireland. We meet this family headed by Eleanor O'Brien, playing Peggy Casey, who runs a family pub since her parents died. Right at the start of the film, dead body has shown up in a lake. And obviously, this isn't good, particularly for Peggy, as she wants business to stay good in the pub, because this is kind of a tourist town in the west of Ireland where people come to fish and stuff like that. Her other siblings enter the scene as well. They're not that keen on her keeping the business, let's just say, and think it's time to sell it up. I suppose the drama happens when Mo Dunford plays a Dublin detective who comes to investigate this dead body. Now, the initial thoughts are the dead body is just a relic, if you want, from a graveyard that was moved. However, this may be a bit more sinister. We see flashbacks to the 1950s when the village was going to be put underwater to make way for a power station. And locals come to the fore. Some of the older locals were remembering what happened. It takes an interesting turn. I like this. I thought maybe at the start there was going to be a kind of twee Irishness to it, but it kind of morphed into something a bit different. And I just think it's great that an Irish language movie that we see different versions of Irish language movies, that they're not all of the on Colleen Kuhn kind, which was a terrific watch. But this is a murder mystery. And Mo Dunford's great in it, as is Eleanor O'Brien. And it kept me guessing as it went on, and I didn't quite see where it was going. And it looks absolutely beautiful. It really does. And they capture the 70s vibe. As I say, I wasn't sure for about the first 30 minutes, but then it morphed into something a bit unexpected that I enjoyed. So that is Boitcha, which is in cinemas now, Irish language movie, worth the price of admission. Mo Dunford is great as the Jackeen cop who comes west, as is Eleanor O'Brien playing Peggy Casey in Boitcha, which is now in cinemas. And also in cinemas this weekend is this.
We call it hoppers.
Hoppers?
Mm-hmm. We use a proprietary mind casting apparatus to hop or inhabit a lifelike replica.
I don't know what that means.
We put this into this.
Yes, yes. This into this.
This is incredible!
Hey, what's your name, Beaver?
Babel?
You want to live here, you better learn pond rules.
What are pond rules?
Oh, I am clearing the rest of the day. Let's hear it for Mabel, everyone.
Now, that was a clip from the new Disney and Pixar animated comedy adventure, Hoppers. We gave away tickets last week for, or the week before, for a special family screening of it. In it, we have Mabel, an animal lover and a nature lover who's very close to her grandmother, who unfortunately passes away. And there's this beautiful glade in a kind of, looks like it might be California or somewhere, that's about to be threatened by demolition of sorts. And she's very keen to protect it and the animals in it. In tandem with that, one of her professors, where she's in college, intimates to her, and it becomes very apparent then, that they're working on something called hopping, as you heard there, where your consciousness can go in to a robotic animal, like a beaver. But the robotic animal will actually be exactly like a real animal. So she enters this animal world. So Mabel becomes a beaver, in essence, and she befriends King George, who you heard there at the end, who's kind of in charge of the animals. And she spends time in this pond and this glade. All the while, destruction is coming in the way of a mare, voiced by John Hamm. This is a beautiful film. I took my three children, who were 13, 10, and 7, and they all really liked it. The animation is gorgeous. There's some nice adult jokes in it as well. It's getting great reviews. It's not just me, you know, just to branch it out. People are calling it a Pixar classic. I kind of go along with that. It's absolutely delightful. Now, the voice cast, as I mentioned, is John Hamm. Meryl Streep does a voice in there. But the two main actors, voice actors, the voice of Mabel, who plays Mabel, the character, but then also Mabel in the Beaver, if you follow me, is voiced by a young American actress called Piper Curda. She was in the horror movie The Wretched. She's done plenty of voice work before and been in some kid movies. And the King Beaver is an American actor who's probably not that familiar on this side of the pond, but is a big deal in America. Bobby Moynihan, because he's on Saturday Night Live and has been part of that ensemble cast for many years now. He was also in other movies and things like that. But if you have kids in your life, you may know the TV show We Bear Bears, another glorious animated TV show. He plays Panda in that. And as I say, in Hoppers, he voices King Beaver, and he does so very well. So I spoke to Piper Curda, who voices Mabel in Hoppers, and also Bobby Moynihan, who voices King Beaver in Hoppers, earlier in the week. Hi, guys. How are you?
What's up, John? Good. How are you?
Greetings from Dublin, Ireland, where yesterday I took my three kids to see Hoppers, and them and me and my wife really enjoyed it. So five happy Irish people, you'd be pleased to hear.
Yay, thank you.
Piper, I'm wondering, you know, when you're voicing a character, you know, it can be complicated enough to find her, his or her voice, but you're doing two voices, yet they're one person, because, not to give a spoiler, but Mabel becomes a beaver for a while. Was it a hard thing in your head that you had to change it up slightly, or maybe not?
No, actually, I didn't change anything, really, about my performance when she's a human versus a beaver. And I should just say that I did that consciously because I'm a good actor and I think about these things. But I think, I think that was part of it, was the fact that, like, Mabel is, it's so impossible for her to be anything but herself.
Sure.
So even though she has literally hopped into the body of a robotic beaver, she's still Mabel, and she's still going to be Mabel. So for me, it was, it had to be this sort of seamless thing because, that's all she knows how to do. And also for me, I haven't done a lot of voice work. So my instinct is not to do a voice or change my voice or whatever. And
but you had the right instinct.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. I think it did. It might've not gotten me the job had I like put on some crazy voice or done something too wild. So
yeah, you didn't overthink it. Well, it paid off. Bobby, is it a great compliment to you as a actor or a voice actor that apparently Daniel, when this character was on the page and they needed this benign King Beaver, he thought of you when you were the only person for the job? That's a great compliment.
It is. I love Daniel with all my heart. Daniel Cass, I knew Daniel from a show called We Bear Bears.
Which my children also love, by the way.
Oh, that's good to hear. It's a beautiful, beautiful show. I played Panda on that show. Mm. And Panda is Daniel. And so is King George. And yes, the fact that he thinks I could even come close to handling this makes me extremely happy. I have gained a lot of confidence from Daniel Chong. He has made my life a lot better. That's all he wants to do is create beautiful things. And I think Piper and I are the same. And I think that's why we are extremely happy to be in this movie, and especially his.
And Piper, you know, like all good children's movies, there's lessons here that they can take away. And I guess the very obvious one is we need to protect our animals, yet we're not struck over the head with it all the time. Like, there's a lovely, gentle message to it, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I think the cool thing too is that I think three people could go watch the movie and they could walk out with a different idea of what they think the message is, you know? Or you could walk out and not feel like there was a message at all and you just had a really good time for 90 minutes. And I think that's a cool feat as well in a world that we live in right now. I think it's a really special movie that I think it will give people hope. That is somewhat in short supply these days.
You can say that again.
Also, Mabel's like an incredibly hard character to play. Like, even just like, if you think about the concept of conservation and all that stuff, like Greta Thunberg, like somebody, like, you know, it's like people telling her to calm down and relax. Like, it's like, no, like you don't, it's so hard to want to be a good person. It's such a bold move. Mm-hmm. And you thread that needle perfectly in this movie. And that's why this movie's going to do well.
It's all down to you. Piper, Bobby, can I just ask you, in this part of the world, we're not as familiar with Saturday Night Live. Yet at the same time, someone like me is very aware of it because
that's cool.
There would be no Eddie Murphy. There would be blah, blah, blah. You know it better than I do.
There'd be no Saturday Night Live without Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
But saved it.
It just seems to be the launching pad for so many people. I assume as a comedian and an actor like yourself, when you get the call, that's like, oh man, my life is no longer what it was. But from what I gather, and compliments to Howard Stern for unearthing this, I think you weren't sure when you actually got the call if you'd gotten the job or not. Is that right?
Yeah, I wasn't positive because Lorne Michaels, the creator of the show, is notoriously vague. He said the sentence, "I think America will love you on the show." And I remember thinking, what does that mean? Like, you know, and I and then 10 minutes, I sat there in silence for 10 minutes going, I'm pretty sure my life's dream just came true. And I sat there in complete silence, and I got a text from Seth Meyers that said, congratulations. And I went, I think it happened. I ran across the street in my boxers and T-shirt to where my mom works. And I ran inside and I screamed, I got it. And I went and cried outside on a bench.
Perfect. Perfect. But just Moynihan, is that Irish? It has to be, right?
Half Irish, half Italian.
Wow, a heady mix.
Sorry, half Italian, quarter Irish, quarter Swedish.
Okay.
Sorry, I mixed that up. I'm 49.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I like a quarter of you. No, I'm joking. Anyway, listen. The film is terrific. And as I say, five people from Dublin, Ireland really liked it. So take that for the rest of the day and continued success to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Hey. Hi to the family.
Bobby Moynihan and Piper Curder there talking to me about their voice roles in the new movie Hoppers. And Hoppers is very much in cinemas now from the 6th of March. And it's a delightful children's movie. And after the break, I'm delighted to say I'm going to be joined by the inimitable Danny Dyer in studio to talk about his new movie where he plays a football agent, One Last Deal. Now opening in cinemas on March 13th is the pressure cooker thriller One Last Deal, which Danny Dyer plays Jimmy Banks, an old school football agent who desperately needs to get his star footballer one last big payday before his life and his player's reputation comes tumbling down. It was filmed almost entirely in one location, with Danny Dyer being the only on-screen performer. Pretty remarkable stuff. It's a tense, gripping thriller that saw Mr. Dyer decamp to Hoth Castle for a while. Danny Dyer needs no introduction, although I see him described recently in places as a national treasure. We'll get into that. I'm delighted to say that, to use his own phrase, he hasn't zoomed me off, but joins me in corporeal form in a studio here in Dublin. Danny Dyer, lovely to see you.
No, I would never zoom you off. You know, you've got to come and see people face to face. It ain't a long flight. You know, I love it. I love it in Dublin, and especially since the film. I've missed it somewhat.
Okay. Well, listen, I really like the film, and thank God, because they said Danny Dyer's around, you want to interview him. I said yes before seeing the film, but now I don't have
to
lie.
Huge mistake.
No, it wasn't. It's terrific. And here's the thing, right? Now, this is going to sound like a very pretentious start, but in a way, right? So it's a gripping, tense thriller, but it's a bit like a Beckett play. Right? You're one man alone hearing voices. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but this must have been very hard to do because it's you and you alone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at a stage, I suppose, in my career where I'm trying to think, okay, I've got a lot of experience. I've been working 30-odd years now. You know, what's the ultimate test? Now, some would argue my ultimate test could be just trying another accent. But it's not really my game, that. I feel like it's not about accents for me. You know, it's about acting is selling words. You're a storyteller. Can you make words interesting? Can I make this character, who's not the nicest of people, let's have it right. I mean, can I get people towards the end to warm to him a bit and have a bit of empathy for him? You know, this is a man who is just out of rehab. He's sort of almost destroyed his own career from his greed and lies, and he hasn't got much morality. And so this is his last shot.
Yeah.
And as you'll find when you watch it, he buckles pretty early.
Yeah.
First bit of adversity, and he relapses. And then it's just really the spiral completely out of control. So I read it and it excited me so much. Peter Howlett wrote it.
Yeah.
It's a really wonderful piece. I really think it'd be a great theatre show. You know what I mean? A one-man show. And I thought, so I read it. They offered me it. I thought, well, now it's down to me whether I say yes or not. And of course, the only way I can test myself is to say yes and fly to Dublin and have 10 days in a room, 120 pages.
Man.
Can you do it? And you know what? I drew on all my professionalism and and the other thing was I didn't really like the character, but that doesn't mean you don't enjoy doing it. It just makes it slightly more trickier.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it starts off, you know, I'd say the first, I talk about it in pages because that's how I remember doing it. I'd say the first sort of 20, 25, he's a vile.
Yeah, deeply unpleasant. You're like, not nice to his family either.
I'm watching this geezer, but then the little twist happens and you go, oh, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
This is a gear change. So so I'm really proud of it.
Yeah. 120 pages.
Yeah.
All by yourself.
Yep.
No one else in the, I know there's crew and all, but you're just getting the voices, like I say.
Yeah.
So you didn't answer the question. You gave me a great answer. Is it the hardest thing you've ever done?
Well, I mean, it's up there.
Yeah.
I think going back to theatre, any play you do, that's the hardest discipline of all. Getting yourself up for 8 shows.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to, you know, do it like you've never done it before. That's hard. But I would say, yeah, probably within the television film industry, for me personally, I've done a lot of films. This probably was the hardest thing I've ever done, yeah. And I'll tell you what, you think 10 days, you go, oh, have you done it in 10 days? I couldn't have done a day 11. Mm. I was done. I was exhausted.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I saw none of Dublin. I literally had an oracle, I had a script of all of the scripts in it, and I would break it down into the days, and I would just rip out 15, throw the rest of the script to us. I didn't want nothing to do with it, and I would just drill these 15 pages, just embed them in my soul. And I would not go to bed until I knew that I had it. I had 2 pints of Guinness in my apartment, and I just drilled it. Finally getting to bed when I felt I'd done it. And the ultimate test is when you get up, I get in that shower and I run it.
Okay.
If it's embedded in the morning while I'm in the shower, I know I'm sweet and I can play all day.
Yeah.
And Brendan Muldowney was incredible. He let me do my thing.
Yeah.
He tweaked me when I needed to be tweaked.
Yeah.
But he totally went gone.
Yeah. And people know you have a football association through family in West Ham, and now son-in-law you're very fond of, maybe your favourite person in the world, Jared Bowen. But I mean, football agents probably aren't going to be complimenting you on this. Do you think, like, I know it's movies and all, Do you have a particular view on football agents?
Well, I think they're running the game at the moment. Mm. I think this is just a particular man who, a certain charismatic individual, ruthless. By the way, I've got an agent. I think most people within our industry need an agent. You need a ruthless agent. You need someone who's going to speak on your behalf and say the stuff you would never say just to get you the best possible deals. Mm. But I do think there is an argument to say that agents are probably do run the game now. And, you know, like contracts within football don't really mean much.
Yeah.
You can sign for 5-6 years and then and all of a sudden the player goes, I don't want to play anymore. And it's all ripped up and they can leave whenever they want. So, and I think that's a lot of agent in ear roll. Mm. So obviously they've got their clients' best interest at heart. But, you know, I think ultimately it should be down to the players really about what decisions they want to make. And I think that maybe it's losing that a little bit. I would think it's only that in the higher... Yeah, you know, circles of football. Yeah. I don't think in the lower leagues it matters so much. But and I suppose it is sort of sport themed in a way, but it's actually a man, again, weirdly, like marching powder, a man struggling with addiction, a man who has, you know, sort of been an awful husband, a terrible father. You know, probably hasn't got many friends in the world, but just absolutely driven by the dollar.
But you do that well because he's also a man in crisis who we root for even though he's made some bad decisions, and you did that, and you've done a lot that I'm not saying you can't do more, but you inhabit that very well. Is that do you think that's not to Freudian it up, but do you think that's
maybe maybe you've got to dig deep in these things. You know what I mean? You've got I think you've got to be quite an odd person to be an actor anyway, quite a sensitive soul, sort of almost always on the edge of tears, you know what I mean? But so you're that's your toolbox, really. Yeah. So this journey with Jimmy Banks really is the bravado at the beginning, and he looks good. We made a very conscious decision to turn up, cufflinks, tie.
He's got
on
braces.
So we had to just, you know, have this man deteriorate, as it were. So we had to find points within the script where it's like the hottest day of the year.
Yeah.
Where I do loosen the tie, that comes off. So okay, then the jacket comes off, and then okay, let's get the cufflinks off. You know, let's roll the sleeves up. You know, until it gets to the point where I've got my braces are down. I mean, shirt's half undone, you know, even with my sort of makeup, it was like, how do we, because I'm very sort of slick back, you know, and all that. And then towards the end of it, I mean, you've seen it, the state of me. But again, because it never cuts away anywhere, we had to find these moments of, and I'm getting more and more drunk as well, obviously, because I'm relapsing badly.
The sixth step of the 12 steps, someone says.
And you know, to stay within that, we did shoot it in order. I've never made a movie where we shot it in order before.
Okay.
I've made many movies where my first scene will be the scene where I get shot to death, you know, and then you jump back in time. Whereas this, we had the luxury of actually shoot it in order. It was a real journey for me. Mm. And as the job went on, I did go crazier and crazier in real life. I feel like I'm a bit more method than I
realised.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of being method. I feel it's a bit pretentious. Maybe I am. Maybe you have to sort of live and breathe it a lot, and you can never quite put it down. I became obsessed with it. The rap party we had at the end, I was so shattered. You know what I mean? I was like,
there was a sense of relief when it was done.
Absolute sense of relief, just because I thought, oh, I've done it. Whether I've done it well or not, time will tell, but I've done it. I completed it, and I had an earpiece, and the reason I had an earpiece is because all my conversations are on the phone, and we had to mix the phone up. So I got a hands free, I got a burner phone, because you can't be on the same sort of phone call. I've got my normal mobile when I do it on loudspeaker. So the other actors who I never met, they was in a tent somewhere, and I'd come in, I'd get my earpiece in, I'd go, hello, how you doing? And they go, oh, hello, Danny. Small talk, what'd you have for breakfast? Oh, I had some toast. And all right, lovely. Here we go. Let's start acting. And that was a weird discipline. So I completely relied on them, and I was very grateful for them. But I forgot how important it is to have a face in front of you. Because
it was just crew you saw.
And a great Irish crew, by the way. Grafters, man. And obviously they wanted to have the crack at the end and have the jolly up. And I did, because I felt like we should go out, because we was a unit. We was an elite unit together, just trying to make this film in 10 days. And so we went to a boozer, I can't remember what it was called now, and... I was just so relieved when I got on the plane. It took me a little while to shake him off, Jimmy Banks, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I've said this before as well. I feel like every job you do, you always leave a little bit of your soul behind.
It shows you care, I guess.
You've got to care, man. Yeah, you've got to
absolutely.
Care. You
know, it's also funny in places, and not to give a spoiler, but you say a line, tell Luke Skywalker I said hello. Yeah, that made me laugh a lot.
Yeah.
Congratulations. It's great. Another job well done. Now you're listening to Screen Time here on News Talk. I'm with Denny Dyer in studio. We're going to take a little break because there's lots more to talk about. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time. I'm here with Danny Dyer in studio, and we're talking about his new movie, One Last Deal, and loads more besides.
Appreciate
I spoke
that.
To you last year for Marching Powder, and I got very interested in you after the interview and some of the things you said.
Went down a rabbit hole, did you?
Yeah, a tiny one for a few days. Now, I have kids and a job, so it didn't last that long.
I'm glad it weren't too intense.
But I listened back to a thing you did in the BFI, and there's a lovely moment in your life, and I don't want to go all Desert Island Discs and keep you here for half an hour talking about, because you've been through it all.
Yeah, of course.
But the moment you started going out of London, getting a bus to these acting classes.
Yes.
When you were 15, 16.
Yeah.
Like, again, I'm putting words in your mouth, but it seems to me, when you look back on your life, there's this sunshine enters the life at that moment, and you were getting like three buses to get there, and you had found something that was almost you didn't think you could be part of, and suddenly the universe was telling you maybe you could have. Is that a fair summation of it?
Yeah, well, it was more about to bunk the train fare.
Oh,
I had to jump the barriers because I didn't have money for a travel card. So I just thought, I'll just get there. And that was for most auditions as well, when I was auditioning, like, to get into Soho, and I didn't really have the money. So, you know, back in the day, you'd sort of either shuffle behind someone. And obviously, it's illegal behaviour. I'm not, you know. But I had to just get there. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you get nicked on the way, I mean, it doesn't matter so much. At least you did the audition. You've bought your lottery ticket. You're in the raffle. But I just felt alive, and I really felt that you know, a kid from East London, you know, education didn't really float my boat. I could spell, I could write, I couldn't really do maths, but I suppose I got the main disciplines. So really, but this acting thing, I was really good at it. I could excel at it. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was good at it. I could never understand why no other kids around me could do it. So I did want to take it further. And being from East London, there is no avenues for you, really.
Yeah.
I think there's probably more avenues then, sadly, than there is now. I feel like, you know, for sure the working classes are very much struggling within the arts. I don't know why we've regressed like that. Something I'd like to look into, maybe. But it was just, and that's all it is. We want a job that makes you feel alive.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about the money, really. The money's lovely when it comes later. I've only recently started to earn money in this game. And like I said, 35 years I've been doing it. So, you know, it's only quite the last 15 years I'm going, oh, actually, I'm earning a good living out of this.
Yeah.
But before then, it wasn't ever about that, really.
Yeah.
You're living hand to mouth still, and you're just praying that the phone rings and you get another job of, you know, you've got council tax bills and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, it was always about the joy. Any young actors listening to this, you got to love it, enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, even when you're having a terrible day, if you go to a little acting class, it just makes you feel alive.
Yeah.
Even it takes you out of your own brain for an hour, you know, but that's how we learn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just as much as you can do, any drama club you can go to, any avenue you've got, go and put yourself out of your comfort zone, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a beautiful thing for me. I found it at quite a young age, and I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah, that's great advice to any young actor listening. Tell me this, two more things, and I'm going to let you go into the Dublin sunshine.
Go on, my old son.
I mentioned the National Treasure thing, and I was kind of half joking, but
I wonder what that means, by the way.
Well, it means that people are probably asking you to come on podcasts and TV shows all the time, because I imagine there was a time you were the infant terrible, or whatever it's called, of the acting world, and you know, by your own admission, you did some shows just to make a living and stuff.
Yeah.
But it seems you're very much in demand now, and people are going, can we get Danny Dyer on? Does it strike you, like, I'm sure you've been asked to Dance with the Stars, to go to islands, all that kind of stuff, but isn't it a strange career trajectory that, you know, for a long time you were probably feeling like an outsider? And I'm not saying you've given up your working class roots or any of that stuff, but you've become, people want you a lot. Isn't it odd?
Again, going back to how long I've been around, so I understand how it works. There's waves of it. You know, you have purple patches. I'm peaking at the moment. It won't last.
Is this peak Danny Dyer?
I'm getting blessed with good work to peak with. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I did make a lot of movies before, and a lot of them were pony. But, you know, I learned from them. I always learned something from every job I did.
Yeah.
I've just been really blessed with some amazing work that people have trusted me with.
Mm.
Like Rivals, like, you know, Mr. Big
Second
Stuff.
Season coming next.
Yeah, just finished.
Mr. Big Stuff, for which you won a BAFTA, no less.
And again, with, you know, One Last Deal, and you know, an opportunity as an actor to, you know, to be part of, you know, the only one in it. Sounds very narcissistic. So you're only as good as the graft in front of you.
Yeah.
So the National Treasure thing. I understand that some people would say, if I looked on Facebook, I'd never leave my house again.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why it breeds this level of hatred, and there's a lot of hatred for me on it.
There's a lot of hatred for everyone.
It's the same as X, which I don't go anywhere near, but or Facebook, to be fair. But there's a whole bunch of people who just want to sit there and attack you, and you know, and you think, well, all I'm doing is trying to have a go. Essentially, what am I doing? I'm like everybody else. I just want to earn a living, and I want to earn a living and have a good life and give my kids what they want, and that's it. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to change the world or anything. So, I'm just rolling with a purple patch at the moment. It's a joy. I never take anything for granted. Mm. So, long may it continue.
Absolutely. And do you find it hard to walk down the street now in terms of recognition?
Well, I think the level of fame's gone up a little bit. Yeah. And so it's all love. It's something you have to, I mean, like going back to the whole getting into acting. No, you don't want to get into acting to become famous. Let me tell you that now. That's a byproduct of it that is quite exhausting. And you've got to be in a mood for it as well. And like I said, it is all love. But it can be quite intrusive. And also with the media, always constantly trying to catch you out, this cat and mouse game of waiting for a downfall of some sort, you know what I mean? So, it can be exhausting. As long as you've got, I've been with the same missus for, 35 stretch.
Wow.
As I like to call it.
Yeah. What's the joke? You would have got less for manslaughter.
She's someone who's been there with me from day dot since I was, 13 years of age, since I really started acting, and she keeps me very much grounded.
I can imagine.
And so I've got a very small circle around me now, and that's what's real life to me, and that's what's important. But, like I said, what this fame thing can do things to you.
Yeah, I know.
And it is what it is.
Well, I hope the purple patch long continues, and One Last Deal is a terrific watch. The last thing I want to ask you is, when I went down that Danny Dyer rabbit hole and I watched a few interviews, I watched you on The Assembly, where you were interviewed by these neurodiverse kids.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is that the, obviously outside of this one, is that the most interesting interview you ever did, maybe?
I jumped at the chance to do that. I understand why. The thing about that show is I have a couple of cousins with severe learning difficulties, Jack and Elliot. They're amazing human beings. They're adults now, but so I've been around people that suffer with neurodivergence. But I find it fascinating that some people potentially would try and use this show as a great PR stunt. Let me tell you something now. If you're just doing it for your own ends, don't go on that show.
Yeah.
Now, there was 30
people.
Well,
they tore you apart.
You've got to be open and honest and speak to, because they are human beings. Some of them have got issues. But they've got brilliant minds, brilliant brains.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to engage with them. Now, this show takes 3 hours. They cut it down to 2.5 hours. So you can imagine the stuff that they edited out.
Yeah.
But I answered everything. That's why I was there, and I was open, and I was honest, and I hope that, I got them to meditate for a bit, and they did, and it was amazing to me.
Yeah.
So, because I know about brains and how, don't shut off, and especially if you've got a neurodivergent brain. So they all did. They sat with me for 3 minutes, and I got really quite choked up within it because it really did a lot for my own brain. Just I'd do that every week, that show, if I was allowed. You know what I mean? I really did enjoy that. I'm very intrigued to see who they're going to get for the second series, because I know it's going again.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see on here a politician.
Well, they had an Irish one that was on just a couple of weeks ago, and we did have the Prime Minister of Ireland, the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. We had a comedian and a man called Ryan Tuberty. Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yours was the best one I've seen, and I'm not just saying
some people have said that. I think you can't go in there with your PR team. Forget about your entourage. Go in, sit down, have a conversation, and all will be well if you're an open, honest person, you know?
All will be well. All I can say is thank you for coming in.
Pleasure,
the new film is terrific, and I hope this purple patch continues long, long, long. Thanks a million, Danny Dyer.
God bless you, my brother.
Cheers.
Don't worry, boys. We've had some dark times, but Jimmy Banks is back. Are you there, kid?
Long time, y'all.
I've had a lot of dealings with Madrid. If you want to play there, Jerome, I'm your man.
Yeah, bro. Hola, Jimmy. Everything is okay with you?
Well, I don't take cocaine for breakfast anymore, so I suppose I'm cured. What would you say to these two words? Jerome Sweet.
Deal.
Hello, Jimmy.
Easy for South.
Everyone
at the
prize?
James.
You said I'd be happy. Matt Gravish was the top goal scorer in the Premier League last season. You're banking on nobody wanting Montoya because of these charges. You're going to pay him what he's worth.
In all my years in soccer management, I have never met such an unprofessional agent.
Well, we call it football here, you mug.
Woo! this is someone who has the power to decide how the rest of your life unfolds.
All right, Jim, what can we do here? There's to be a way out of this. I need you to help me.
Someone has got some serious shit on us.
A clip there from One Last Steal, which is in cinemas next week from the 13th of March. And of course, you heard me talking there to the inimitable Danny Dyer, who was in great form. One Last Steal is a great watch. It's a big performance, you know, just to be by yourself. And it was tough going, as you heard him say there. I'm very fond of that man. Afterwards, it was funny, we were talking. The funniest thing he said was actually after the interview, because it turns out when I interviewed him this year, it was the exact same date as last year when I interviewed him for another movie called Marching Powder. And we were getting a photo taken afterwards. And I said to him, this is like one day, you know, we're going to meet same day every year, only with less sex. And he said, well, let's not rule it out. Let's wait and see what happens. Which made me laugh a lot. Thought of me and Danny Dyer, you know, romantically involved. It's probably a stretch for all people concerned, not least of all Danny Dyer. Anyway, great to talk to Danny Dyer. Next week on the show, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to have the cast of Peaky Blinders, including Tim Roth, including Rebecca Ferguson, and including Cillian Murphy. I'm also going to be talking to its creator, Stephen Knight. So Peaky Blinders fans won't want to miss that next week. I'm also going to be talking to a fascinating guy who directed the new film How to Make a Killing, John Patton Ford. So a busy show again next week. I'll just remind you, if you want to get in touch with the show and tell us what you're watching, what you're thinking of watching on the big or small screen, or even on your phone, what you're watching. I mean, you know, keep it sensible. You can email us screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday on the Go Loud app at 5 p.m. and it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on News Talk. I'll squeeze in a little music from the movies. I think I played this song last year when Danny Dyer was in, because his movie last year, Marching Powder, had a great soundtrack and it had this piece of cheese on it that I hear it and I go, that's terribly cheesy, but a part of me kind of likes it. So I'm going to leave you with Tapao, China in Your Hand from the movie Marching Powder, and wish you a happy remainder to your weekend, and I will talk to you all next week.
It was the theme she had on the scheme he had, told in a foreign land, to take life on earth to the second birth, and the man